Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. We're going to look at a lot of issues today. Short topics, commentaries, and a guest, Jeffrey Smith, talking about GMOs and all the illnesses we may be affected with because we're eating genetically modified foods. That's going to be very important. Also, time permitting, from our environmental segment, scientists discover 91 volcanoes hidden beneath Antarctica ice sheet. What does that mean? Well, it means that Antarctica is melting a lot faster than what anyone predicted, and therefore there's no accurate model to tell us when it's going to melt, sooner rather than later. Also, we're going to look at four audio clips today. They're all short. We have had an enormous response to Aaron Russo, the multi-award-winning director and producer, who decided to do a documentary on the income tax system. And he really shook things up because he did his homework. He didn't interview just anyone. He interviewed former commissioners of the Internal Revenue Service. And so we're going to play another part of that today. And I think you'll find it interesting. Also, I'm going to continue with a different perspective on consumerism and public relations. They go hand in hand. To show you how we ended up as a nation addicted to certain purchasing things, such as junk foods and smoking cigarettes and drinking alcohol. So that'll be today. Also, what a coincidence. Wow. Three individuals in one short 60-minute clip. That's all I'll say. Also today, I'll be doing part two of why the corporate Democrat liberal community, that is not real liberals, by the way, but the corporate Democrats under Clinton's, because they work together, why you should have been concerned far beyond his sexual escapades. It was what policies they actually implemented and what they would have implemented. An accurate historical perspective today on that. And then I got a call from a friend who said, I was talking with a lot of young people this week. This friend's a professor. And he said, I was just amazed at what they didn't know about America's history. I said, specifically, he said, well, we were talking about the Revolution. They didn't know anything about our founding fathers, what they stood for. So Friday, another of the short talks on real history, the real history of the American Revolution, our founding fathers, what they stood for, the contradictions within them, the best and worst that they were, and I don't know, I'll maybe take 10. And that way we can put it in proper perspective. Then the following Friday, I'll do a historical review on the Civil War. A lot of people are just either confused or they're just wrong about what went on in the Civil War? What was it about? Who benefited? Who lost? And why? And then the following week, the Vietnam War, and then World War II, and then the Korean War. So I'm just going to do a series over the next 4 weeks, 5 weeks, of the real history versus the official history. So that's what we have coming at you today. And as always, we begin with the latest on health and healing. I'm talking on a regular land-based phone. Apologize that it's not the same technical quality. But within the next 7-8 days, we'll be up to par with a brand-new portable Comrex unit that allows me, when I'm traveling, to broadcast anywhere at high quality. This is from the University of Pennsylvania, and it talks about under 50. Lower U.S. life expectancy. Quote, high mortality rates among Americans under 50 explain why life expectancy is lower in the United States than in most developed nations. The new study finds that excess death among Americans younger than 50 accounted for 2/3 of the gap in life expectancy at birth between American males and their counterparts and 2/5 between females and their counterparts in comparison countries. And this was published in health affairs. And why? Because we're not dealing with communicable diseases that at one time in history wiped out. We're not dealing with child labor where a kid would work 6 days a week, 12 hours a day, frequently be worked to the bone, worked to death, and then end up with a defective immune system and died of tuberculosis, or consumption, or malnutrition. No. It's not about death due to a doctor doing an autopsy and going in and delivering a baby and infecting the baby and the mother and they dying. Nope. This is a drug overdose, medication overdose, opiate overdose, and homicides. So we are seeing a shortening of the life expectancy of some Americans because they're not paying attention. Also, we're morbidly obese. We're the fattest nation in world history per population. That is not good. We also have more diabetics and pre-diabetics. Nearly one-third of the American population, who are adults, are pre- or diabetic. We have the highest blood pressure per population. Now, mind you, we're only 330 million people. We're dealing with India and China together, 2.5 and a half billion people, and yet we are sicker per population. So all this money we're spending is a waste. We're getting nothing really for it, except for emergency medicine. There I commend American medicine, our emergency facilities, our life support facilities, the ability to do microsurgery. You have your jaw broken, an eye gouged, a brain trauma, a heart attack or a stroke, a severed finger. We're very good at helping that person recover. But that only represents about 10 to 12% of all medicine. That means 88 to 90% of all medicine fails. Not only does it fail, it's the number one cause of death. And no one's looking at it. I mean no one. When the AMA looked at it, they acknowledged it at the third leading cause of death is iatrogenesis, but they conveniently excluded either a lack of scholarship, a lack of people who cared, or not wanting the people to realize how deadly American medicine was, because there's a big difference between, say, iatrogenesis third leading cause versus it's the number one cause. More people die due to their doctors, medications, hospital errors than any other cause. More people die of iatrogenesis than of heart attacks or strokes or cancer or diabetes. But they left out infections. And that's a big number. You get infections when you go into hospitals because there's so little sanitation, including MRSA. In fact, recently, in my own case, I was getting my annual checkup. I get several checkups a year, have all my blood chemistry done and echocardiograms and cardiostress tests and skin cancer tests just to check my skin. And because you can't always tell, you know, on your back or shoulders if that's just a simple crustacean, you know, or a precancerous lesion, squamous cell carcinoma. And that's why you should really be checked. And in any case, I was getting blood drawn, and the person dropped the tourniquet and then picked it back up again. The use, and I said, hold on a second, what are you doing? That's contaminated. Oh, okay. And then punching around looking for a vein with their finger. And that finger's completely contaminated. Then taking a little alcohol swipe and swiping as if that's going to sterilize any bacteria or viruses or parasites or anything else on that finger. That's not true. You really have to rub it in the whole area. It's just amazing how unsanitary American medicine is. And that's at least when I'm looking there and observing it and telling him to stop and, you know, get a new one. And so that's a problem. But it's not changing, and it's not going to change, and it can't change. It's not possible to change American medicine. It's $3.5 trillion, and no one wants to give up a penny of that. So just be aware, it's always good to stay healthy. But a lot of people are very careless. They're drinking, they're binge drinking in college, they're drinking socially, they're not exercising, they're eating garbage foods, comfort foods, fried foods, salty foods, sweet foods. None of that, Not a single thing is good for us. It all promotes disease. And then you end up with stress. And a new study on millennials shows that the millennials are really stressed, but then the teenagers in America, based on a new study of almost 12 million over the last 10 years, found that today's young people suffer in ways that other people have not. In fact, a new study from Motherboard looked at 500,000 teens and suggested that between excessive screen time, they end up with depression. So it's a bleak finding, but other research suggested that adolescent hyperconnectedness is also there. So we have young people who just love their phones. Teenagers love their phones. But according to this article, for North American teen girls, especially increasing smartphone use could have a darker side. Depression and suicide rates in teenagers have jumped in the last decade, doubling between 2007 and 15 for girls, and the trend especially coincides with when smartphones became their constant companions. A recent study placed their screen time around 9 hours a day. Wow. And another study published this week suggested suicide and depression could be connected to the rise of smartphones and increasing screen time. About 58% more girls reported depression symptoms in 2015 than 2009, and suicide rates rose by 65%. And smack in the middle of that window of time, smartphones gained market saturation. Quote, even if we call screen time a neutral and assume it doesn't hurt or help, it may still have a negative impact if it crowds out time for seeing friends in person. Yeah, you think? But what about all the medications these teens are on, where suicide is a side effect? Depression is a side effect of the antidepressant drugs. And what about the phones themselves? There are over 45 studies that I have, and I'm sure I don't have all the studies, showing that that portable listening device, as well as your computer, are penetrating the body with very harmful Wi-Fi waves. And those adversely affect chromosomes, they alter DNA, and they really are destructive to our bodies. So when you're carrying it around, you're sleeping with it under your pillow, you're looking at it all the time, it's as if you're living in a completely radio wave toxic environment 24/7. And then those people have those watches, I'm sure you've seen, you know, where he goes out for a run and he has to check the temperature and check his pulse and check his blood pressure. Why? Why not just go out for a run and enjoy the run and come back and do a stopwatch? That's what I do. I just have an old-fashioned stopwatch. You start it, you stop it, and reset it. There's no electrical pulse because that's coming into your body. And now the former president, I think it was of Google or Apple, I think it was Apple, a woman goes on television and is showing this tattoo she has. And she mentions that tattoo actually has micro antenna in it. And it's able to send signals constantly into her body. Why would you want that? You realize where this is going. The next thing after that will be microchipping, which is happening now. And then they now have a new pill that you take that can read your body chemistry from inside. That's the last thing you want. Because what else is it doing? They're using nanoparticles, and these are not healthy. So, a word to the wise. For teenagers, restrict the amount of cell phone time. Explain why, so they don't feel they're being punished and then rebel against you as being a bad parent by depriving me of my friends. No, no one on those smartphones are your friends. They're just as depressed and stupid and lonely as you are. And you just got one big vacuous group of people out there. The only way they know about the world is through passive Googling it. But that's not a way to live. So they're paying a price for it. And the parents are paying a price because how bad is it if your child ends up dying or committing suicide, And all along, there were 25,000 indications and warning signs, and you just kept, every time the buzzer went on, you pushed it off because you didn't want to be inconvenienced. Parents have to take responsibility in this also. And but again, the parent that want to make your child your friend is no longer a good parent, terrible parent. You're not supposed to be your child's best friend. You're supposed to be there to give a, to be the wise man, wise woman, to guide them in the choices they make and have boundaries and explain so they understand the consequences of their choices. Now, if they want to make bad choices, self-destructive choices after they're out of your, you know, guardianship, that's their business, that's their freedom of choice. But don't let them do it while you're there. Otherwise, there's no boundaries. No boundaries, there's no sense of self. There's only this kind of interconnectedness with everyone else that's out there searching the web. That's unfortunate. Now, also, that's why they're dying younger. We get a whole lot of people dying young. And then, according to Mary Elizabeth Dallas of Health Day, the use of antipsychotic drugs among Medicaid-insured children increased sharply. And guess what? It was in the same time period as all these other kids were committing suicide. Here's what she says, the title of the article, and this is from Antipsychotic Drug Use Rising for Kids on Medicaid, study finds. Researchers say meds were often prescribed off-label for conditions like ADHD. Quote, these drugs were prescribed for children covered by Medicaid 500% more often than for children with private insurance. Researchers said this disparity should be examined more closely, particularly because these drugs were often prescribed for so-called off-label use, which is when a drug is used in a different way than has been approved by the U.S. FDA. And, yeah, well, let's look at it. Of all the psychiatrists in America and psychopharmacologists, let them show me a single study that brain chemical imbalance is real and that their selective serotonin reuptake inhibiting drugs will cure it. Let them show me one article. In preparing for this new documentary coming out next summer, 6 years working on this, every single article in the scientific literature on the efficacy and safety of these drugs has been reviewed. Outside psychiatrists, pharmacologists, toxicologists, behavioralists, sociologists were all interviewed. There's no evidence at all, zero evidence that they're able to help anybody. And yet, because it's now been propagandized and we have been enculturated to believe that we need them if we're depressed, we need them if we're anxious, we don't. We don't. Now, we may need the kindness of people who will listen to us and who are professional and have experience to help us through some of our emotional difficulty, but we don't need those drugs. One more reason why the death rate in young people is up. From the Journal of Clinical Oncology, a study reports that Chinese women who consume more soy live longer compared with those who consume less soy, especially concerning lung cancer. Quote, to our knowledge, this is the first study to suggest an association between high soy consumption before a lung cancer diagnosis and better overall survival, Professor Yang at Vanderbilt University Medical Center. So, one more reason that those are important. Also, we need more fruits and vegetables on a daily basis. The latest study just out today shows that Americans are not eating their fruits and vegetables. So what would be some superfoods or spices, things that you could include in an American diet, even for someone who likes junk food? Walnuts, artichokes, grape juice, cranberry juice, pineapple juice, cloves, broccoli, green tea are just some. But they're not having any of that. So we've got to really sit down with people and explain to them what's in the diet that they're eating. For example, if a person was breastfed, and hopefully women who are pregnant will breastfeed, breast milk kills cancers mothers should breastfeed their babies because the substance in their milk kills cancer. This is new evidence, and it should be used. The compound is called human alpha lactoalbumin. It's made lethal to the human tumor cells. So that's good. So let's start breastfeeding. Telomere length. I've talked a lot about that. That is a protein at the end of your chromosomes that help keep the chromosomes intact and their integrity, and therefore let them live longer life, which means you literally live a longer life with longer telomeres. And that's why a healthy plant-based diet and juicing and de-stressing and exercise helps extend that telomere length, whereas your average diet, stress, depression, being overweight, all create a shortening of telomeres. This is from Science Daily, published in Molecular Ecology. Researchers at the University of East Anglia have found that biological age and life expectancy can be predicted by measuring an individual's telomeres or their DNAs. The research shows that individuals differ radically in how quickly their telomeres shorten with age, and that having shorter telomeres at any age is associated with an increased risk of death. Telomere length is a better indicator of future life expectancy than actual age may be, and therefore an indicator of biological age. And this was a 20-year research project, and this first of its kind to measure telomeres across the entire lifespan of individuals in a population. And just remember, the telomere acts as a protective cap to stop genes close to the end of the chromosome degenerating. Just imagine the hard plastic ends on a shoelace. Quote, telomeres help safeguard us from cancer. Okay. Now, I've talked about a long time that your chronological age, your 30, your 40, your 50, is not what's important. It's your biological age. And your biological age determines how long you're going to live. And that's where a healthy lifestyle can lengthen them. And one final one, published in the Annals of Neurology, that's the Journal of the American Neurological Association, found that blueberries and strawberries, which are very high in flavonoids, appear to reduce cognitive decline in older adults. That's really good news, because what the study is suggesting is that cognitive aging could be delayed by almost 3 years if you ate more berries. And flavonoids, for those of you who are not aware, are compounds found in plants that generally have powerful antioxidant and anti-inflammatory properties. And I believe that stress and inflammation contribute to cognitive impairment more than anything else, and that increasing your consumption of berries and also garlic and onions and apples could mitigate the harmful effects. So we have an awful lot of people, 65 and older, in the United States, and that's a very susceptible generation. And all you have to do is look at the Nurses' Health Study, a cohort of 121,000 nurses that have been in a study beginning in 1976. It's the longest such study of its kind, and their findings show that increasing consumption of blueberries and strawberries slows cognitive decline. So the older you get, the more berries you should be consuming. That's the message there. That's the latest in health and nutrition. I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment. Please stay with us. In the area for Thanksgiving, whether you celebrate it or not, I'm going to be doing a program at noon tomorrow, so so hope you listen in. But if you're traveling and you still want to listen in, let me give you a phone number that you can call from anywhere in the United States or Canada and listen in Monday to Friday, noon to 1. That number is, please write it down, 424-203-8046, 424-203-8046. But let's just say you're just very busy and don't have time, but you want to catch it on the archives. Here's the archive number. And when you call, you can listen up to 5 different programs from that one phone call. 701-719-9976. 701-719-9976. Now let's listen to a short clip from Aaron Russo, who's being interviewed about his very important documentary on the Federal Reserve and our money system, including the IRS.
Can we go into the IRS now?
Sure,
let's talk about it. That's huge.
Well, the IRS is huge, but don't forget the IRS is just part of the Federal Reserve system problem. And in actuality, there is no law. I've researched this very thoroughly, because I kept hearing for years there's no law that you have to pay, and I sort of poo-pooed it.
Yeah, I did too.
And they make you think anybody that says that's a wacko and a kook, you know. But there is no law. Let me just tell you straight out. There is no law that requires you to file a 1040. I researched this, and I'll tell you why there's no law. First of all, the Constitution says, okay, that there's two kinds of taxation, direct taxes and indirect taxes. A direct tax must be apportioned and done by census, which means that a direct tax, which is what a tax on your labor would be, a direct tax, you can't get away from it, right? A direct tax on your labor would have to be apportioned, meaning divided amongst all the people equally, right? Mm-hmm. And an indirect tax is like an excise tax. It's like a tax that you don't have to pay if you don't use the service.
Luxury car or something.
Well, not even a luxury car came later, but like gasoline.
Right.
If you don't want to drive a car, if you want to take a bicycle, you don't buy gas, you don't pay the tax.
Right.
So that's called an indirect tax. But that indirect tax has to be the same in every state.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be uniform. Okay? So there's two kinds of taxes, direct and indirect, in the Constitution. In 1894, they tried to pass an income tax on your labor. The Supreme Court said you can't do that. It's unconstitutional. They stopped. In 1913, to get around that Pollock decision of 1894, right, they passed the 16th Amendment, which said we can tax any income from any place forever, okay? And once they passed that tax, then people started paying an income tax on the labor. It became a third form of taxation.
Mm-hmm.
You had direct apportioned tax, you had the indirect tax, and now you had a direct tax that was unapportioned,
mm-hmm.
okay? So you had three forms of taxation now. But two things. The amendment was never ratified properly. It was a fraud, okay? And that's been proven. But the second point is this. Even if it wasn't a fraud and had been ratified properly, even if it had been, okay, the Supreme Court in 8 different decisions that I have researched said the 16th Amendment gave the government no new power of taxation. They can't tax the labor of the American people. So it was finished. And in 1917, they stopped taxing. So they did it for 3 years, right? And so there is no tax on the labor of the American people, no legal tax and no constitutional tax. So they've made the IRS code, right, says whatever it says. But whatever it says is irrelevant, because it's not in compliance
with
the Supreme Court decisions.
Right.
Right? So even the IRS code, if you actually examine it, okay, even though it's irrelevant because it doesn't comply with the Supreme Court, actually, if you examine it, there's still no law that makes you pay a tax on your labor.
Okay. Right, yet every one of us, I guess there are, 69, 70 million Americans who don't, but most of the rest of us are on the treadmill and we're paying dutifully our taxes on time each year.
Well, they make you feel if you don't pay it, you're not a good citizen. That's part of their propaganda.
Well,
and that's what allows them to keep spending money.
But in fact, it's not just you saying this. What I found very compelling in your film is that you're talking with former IRS agents and investigators who were put to the task of finding out on behalf of inquiries as to whether or not this was a legal practice,
right.
Only to find out that it wasn't legal. And in fact, some of these people who were formerly with the IRS have not paid their taxes since they found out about this.
Right. There are many IRS agents, former agents, who have left the IRS because they did the research, and they were in there before I was.
Right.
You know, and they deserve to be honored for the work they've done, because it's a giant, in my opinion, it's a giant scam. And
it takes a lot of courage to do that, though, because what are we still up against?
Well, the thing is that we're up against the police state, because what they'll do is, even though there's no law, they threaten people with harm.
Right.
You see, but I interviewed the IRS commissioner, the ex-IRS commissioner, who wrote the tax code. He was general counsel to the IRS, he was the commissioner to the IRS, and he wrote the tax code, okay? His name is Sheldon Cohen, and I interviewed him for the movie. And in the movie, he says, Supreme Court decisions are inapplicable to the IRS.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And what does he give as a justification for that?
He has no justification, because I put him into a corner. He couldn't answer the questions. So he was forced at the end to say, Supreme Court decisions don't matter, which we all know is a lie.
Right.
So the IRS is not beyond the Supreme Court, right? So there is no law that allows the government to have a direct, unapportioned tax on your labor. Okay?
Now, you heard what he had to say. And he did his homework, like Dr. Suzanne Humphrey spent 16,000 hours more studying the truth about the safety and efficacy of vaccines and could find neither safety nor efficacy. It's hard to imagine that we've all been conned, but then again, we are conned on a lot of different things. And so if there's anyone in this audience who can show the proof to dispute him, please share it. And I'll be happy to post it. And otherwise, more to think about. I'd like to now go into some other issues that I think are important. For example, why are medical procedures so expensive in the United States, where you could easily fly to another country, have that procedure done, and spend 2 months there on vacation, and it would still be less than having a regular procedure done in the United States, from hip transplants or knee reconstructive surgery, everything is more expensive. Here's one of the reasons why we're paying so much. This is from Common Dreams. Obscene 70 top healthcare CEOs, that means the top people running 70 of our healthcare agencies, raked in $9.8 billion, almost $10 billion just to these 70 CEOs since 2010. And, wow, that breaks down to where they made, are you ready for this? The median household income in 2015 was $56,115, which is what one of these CEOs makes in less than one day's work. So while the Senate's GEO plan to repeal the Affordable Care Act has been denounced as potentially devastating to the poor and the sick and women and people of color and children and those with pre-existing conditions, a new analysis published just this Monday finds that no matter what happens, the CEOs of large healthcare companies are likely to continue living lavishly. So everybody's making money when it comes to our diseases. Here's an idea, just an idea, something to think about. We should have, and it should have had a long time ago, universal health care. So you say, how would we pay for it? Well, there's three ways of paying for it where it doesn't cost an American a nickel. First and foremost, you're getting rid of the insurance companies, and that eats up about 33% of all the expense. That's over $1.1 trillion. That's saved right there because that's all administrative. Secondly, you have people hired inside these insurance companies, generally medical doctors, who will disallow, say no to procedures you should have. That frequently could put someone at risk of dying because they're saying, no, I don't want you to have that. I don't believe that you should be covered for that. Of course, that goes into their bonus at the end of the year. The more people they can deny insurance coverage, the better they make it. And by the way, be very clear, insurance companies are not your friend. They're not there to bail you out when something happens. This latest hurricane is a good example of that. I'll just use myself as an actual example. I have a ranch in Southwest Florida, and it's a rescue ranch where I rescue animals and give them a quality of life. Well, that Category 4 storm at 160-mile-an-hour winds made a lot of damage. I pay very heavy insurance premiums, and when the adjuster came and looked at it, he said, wow, this is terrible. This is the worst in Florida that we have thus far. But they only wanted to repay me about 12 cents on the dollar. I said, well, that's not right. I'm paying my premiums every month and very high premiums so I can be fully covered. So why would you only offer me 12 cents on a dollar? That means that I have to pull out of my own pocket 88% of repair for the damage done. And that's how they work. They make these huge amounts of profit. They're very good for Wall Street investors because even after paying damages, they pay as little as they can. So the whole manufactured artificial image on television that these are good people, they're not. They're only in it for the dollar. But that's also true of the insurance people in the health field. So why is it that they have not advocated for a preventative program? Why has the Surgeon General, the U.S. Public Health Service Director, the head of the CDC, the FDA, the U.S. Public Health Service, all of its agencies, including the National Cancer Institute and the National Institute of Mental Illness, why haven't they advocated preventing disease that costs so much to treat? Well, look where they come from. Frequently they're coming out of the pharmaceutical industry or coming from the insurance industry. And so they control the dialogue. So we're not being covered the way we should be, and it's all about profit. Imagine how many diseases we could prevent if in every community in America we opened up free class counseling clinic on how to reduce weight, how to lower blood pressure naturally without drugs, how to get rid of our cholesterol down to a normal level, how to prevent skin cancer, how to prevent periodontal conditions by having lectures by holistic dentists, how to de-stress naturally and showing techniques and offering classes and guidance and counseling so we don't rely upon drugs or alcohol or marijuana to get us into a de-stress mindset that doesn't change anything about what we were stressed about. There's not a penny paid on prevention. So if you start actively preventing disease and you do it in every school and you have not the dairy industry, the meat industry, the pharmaceutical industry dictating the curriculum, but rather have good quality independent scientists, dietitians, nutritionists, and public health advocates giving the information, then people can make changes and people can prevent disease. And that would substantially reduce by at least 50% our current number of illnesses, because at least 96% of all of our illnesses could be prevented. So drop off another $1 trillion because you're preventing diseases that otherwise you would have to pay for. Then go back and redo the Medicare at Part B, where they and the lobbyist for the pharmaceutical industry put in there that the government cannot negotiate on the generic inexpensive drugs. They must instead buy the most expensive drugs. And hence we've seen what happens in a rapacious marketplace where a drug that in one country cost $100 in the United States could cost $5,000. So we need to bring the cost of all medications down to what does it cost for a 30-day supply at the generic level, a generic drug, and then allow them a reasonable margin of profit. No one's saying they shouldn't make a profit. It's just a reasonable one, not 10,000% in profit. That saves about $300 billion a year. Then get rid of medical malpractice, because we're a highly litigious society. And hence, doctors are fearful They pay very high premiums. Some are paying $150,000, $200,000 a year, so that if they're sued by a patient, at least they won't go broke in the process defending themselves. So what do doctors do? They make sure that you're over-tested, you're over-treated, and that's called defensive medicine, and it's dangerous. Could you imagine getting a CAT scan, even if you didn't need it, because a doctor wanted to make sure that you couldn't open that door and sue him on that level of diagnosis error? CAT scans are dangerous. There's a lot of radiation hitting your body, and there's consequences to radiation in the body. So if you took away all malpractice and you had no-fault medical practice where you have a general fund, and then anyone who has been mistreated or needs to be compensated for lost work or injury, that fund pays for it and caps awards so that you won't have it a gravy train for malpractice and personal injury attorneys. That's a cottage industry now. So you take away, it's like legalizing drugs. Now you take away the profit incentive, and hence the gangs can't make the money off the drugs, billions of dollars a year that they've been making, and then engage in such violence to control and monopolize their drugs in any given area. So just imagine you go into a doctor's office, the doctor's not going to over-test you, over-treat you, over-medicate you, because they're protected. So that saves money also. So when you look at what you can save from our current medical paradigm that is so warped and so slanted and so biased, you can save at least $2.5 trillion. Therefore, what you're left with is about $1 trillion in actual necessary expenses. And then if you taxed all Wall Street transactions, 1%, that's it, 1% on every algorithm trade, 1% on every stock trade, then you would bring in an additional $200 to $300 billion a year. So by doing it this way, then it's not an additional expense to the government. You're saving money for the government. It's not an expense for the individual. You're saving money. And also open it up to all of the 80,000-plus licensed alternative therapists, whether it's chiropractic or naturopathy or homeopathy. These are all legitimate sciences and ways of healing. And so that there can be some competition against the existing protocols, which, by the way, in most cases, simply don't work, like statin drugs. So that's what I believe we should do in order to help the American public heal, prevent disease, and change the medical paradigm so that it reflects what it should, helping people get well and stay there. And also stop the attacks and discrimination and exclusion of that which they cannot control and is not proprietary or patented. There's an enormous amount of fraud in the medical industrial complex. Lots of studies are done that are ghostwritten that are fraudulent studies. Lots of drugs are passed that are really not safe or effective, as stated. And if we did the right thing by Americans, then the existing paradigm would no longer have the power it does now. Now let's go over and say hello to Jeffrey Smith. Hi, Jeffrey.
Hello, Gary. How you doing?
I'm doing great, and we're going to talk about the relationship between GMO consumption and almost 20 adverse health conditions. By the way, Jeffrey is a leading spokesperson for the health dangers of genetically modified organisms and the chemical agricultural industry. He is the founding executive director of the Institute for Responsible Technology, which is helping all of us better understand GMO's health risks. And he's trying to organize, get GMOs removed from the marketplace. He's got a book called Genetic Roulette that I recommend, and a subsequent documentary film by the same title. And his website is responsibletechnology.com. He also has non-GMOimproovehealth.com. Jeffrey, share with our audience, please, the science behind the creation of genetically modified plant foods, which should convince everyone listening that there's no identical science that a genetically engineered vegetable is the same as a non-genetically engineered vegetable, and what they call substantially equivalent.
That's right, Gary.
So I want
to just do a little correction. It's responsibletechnology.org, and at the new website that we created just a couple of weeks ago, Non-GMOs Improve Health, I published a peer-reviewed article that shows that people who switched to non-GMO recovered from 28 conditions, 28, and the number one was digestive problems, with 85% reporting improvement in their digestive health when they switched to non-GMO. Now, you asked the question, is it substantially equivalent, or explain why it's not. In this article, which again is at Non-GMOs Improve Health, we describe three different aspects of genetic engineering that could explain why so many diseases and disorders are linked to them. The process of genetic engineering involves forcing a gene from one species into the DNA of another species, or rearranging the genes within a DNA. And this creates massive collateral damage in the DNA. And so there are studies that show, for example, that Monsanto's corn has higher levels of cadaverine and putrescine, which are responsible for the foul odor of rotting dead bodies, and they're also linked to allergic reactions and cancer. So the process itself is one of the three potential reasons why GMOs cause these problems, as described in my article. The second one is that the reason they genetically engineer crops, in one case, is to produce an insecticide in corn, cotton, and soybeans. It's an insecticide called BT toxin. And so these plants are actually registered as insecticides. And if you eat a corn plant from Monsanto and others, then you will get this insecticide in your gut. And peer-reviewed published studies in 2012 showed that in a test tube, this BT toxin will poke holes in human cells. The holes are the same holes that it pokes in the guts of insects to kill them. That's why they put these genes into the food, so that it pokes holes in the walls of the guts of insects to kill them. And they said, oh, it won't have any effect on mammals. Well, they're wrong. It turns out it pokes holes in human cells as well. And the third reason, Gary, that they genetically engineer, and this is by far the number one reason the vast majority of GMOs are engineered not to die when sprayed with herbicide, most notably Roundup. So these Roundup-ready seeds, soy, corn, cotton, canola, sugar beets, and alfalfa, these are engineered to be doused with Roundup herbicide, active ingredient glyphosate, named by the World Health Organization as a probable human carcinogen. But if you look at the study and the summary that's easy to read for the layperson, we describe how Roundup also is an antibiotic and can mess up the microbiome. It chelates minerals, making them unavailable for metabolic pathways. It can cause endocrine disruption. It's linked to birth defects. It can damage the mitochondria. It can throw off the estrogen-testosterone balance, among other things. The BT toxin is an allergen and can poke holes in human cells, and the process of genetic engineering itself can create all sorts of unknown toxins, allergens, new diseases and nutritional problems, or elevate existing levels of allergens like it does with soy, as much as a sevenfold increase in trypsin inhibitor.
Your institute conducted a survey of over 3,200 people who switched their eating habits from GMO produce and products to natural and organic foods, and there's enormous improvement observed for many different health conditions. The top six conditions were digestive problems, which, by the way, far the most frequent, 85%, followed by fatigue, obesity, brain fog, mood disorders, including anxiety and depression and food allergies. Can you supply some biological information that would account for GMOs as a major causal factor for these health conditions, especially gut disorders?
Yes, the gut disorders was the number one. And so in this 21-page article, the third part was all about the digestive disorders. I don't want to scare people away from the article. There's a quick summary also available on the site. Now, for digestive disorders, let's just take Roundup, for example. Roundup as an antibiotic, favorably kills the beneficial gut bacteria. In other words, the lactobacillus, the bifidobacteria, the stuff that people pay for in health food stores, that's the most easily killed by Roundup. And the nasty stuff, the salmonella, the botulism, the negative E. coli, those are more resistant. And so one thing that can happen is the gut bacteria can end up imbalanced with the pathogens growing, and the gut bacteria is responsible in part for digestion and detoxification in the immune system. It also helps protect the gut from leaky gut. Now, we've also seen in laboratory experiments that the application of glyphosate, the active ingredient of Roundup, causes a breaking apart of cells so the tight junctions become loose, one of the forms of leaky gut. In addition, in animal studies, the glyphosate has damaged the microvilli. These are the fingers extending from the walls of the intestines that absorb the food. It also suppressed digestive enzymes in carnivorous fish. And so if you look at the animal studies, you look at its modes of action, and you could see why it can wreak havoc in the digestive system. Now, the BT toxin has also been shown in animal studies to damage the microvilli. It also can poke holes in the cells directly at high concentrations. We have to see if it works in humans that way, but it did in test tubes. And it was actually found in the blood of 93% of the pregnant women tested in Canada. So it may have actually gotten into the blood through the holes that it poked in the walls of the of our cells, which are one cell thick. So we have the BT toxin poking holes, the Roundup possibly creating gaps between the cells, and then the process of genetic engineering itself can cause these massive collateral damage, and you have allergic reactions possible because in the soy you have a sevenfold increase in trypsin inhibitor, which also can lead to digestive disorders. In a corn variety, you have a new allergen there. All of these can interact with the digestive tract's immune system, which is often built into the microbiome. So those are some examples. Now, if you look at the animal feeding studies from the GMOs, then you see that the process of genetic engineering caused caused potentially precancerous cell growth in the digestive tract. In a study done back in 1998 by my friend Arpad Pusztai. And he showed that it wasn't the specific gene that they transferred that caused the problem. It was the generic process of genetic engineering. He also discovered that another GM crop caused a thickening of the intestines substantially. And a genetically modified tomato caused bleeding stomach or stomach lesions. So these are just some examples of actual feeding studies that show a potentially devastating effect in the digestive tract, and we can support that by what we know about Roundup, BT toxin, and the process of genetic engineering.
Final issue before we end our show today, what are some of the other 22 health disorders that seem to be closely associated with consuming GMO food?
Excellent question. I will say, since we're ending, that we're starting a series next week called Healing from GMOs. Certainly the number one recommendation is to eliminate GMOs and switch to organic. But to accelerate the reversal of the damage done by GMOs, and I've described many of the modes of action, we have a free series at healingfromgmos.com, where we talk about how to replenish the microbiome, how to close the gaps of the walls of the intestines more quickly than simply changing your diet. So in terms of the other problems, you left off at food allergies and sensitivity. Then is memory and concentration, joint pain, seasonal allergies, gluten sensitivity, insomnia, skin conditions including eczema, hormone problems, pain in the muscular skeletal system, autoimmune disease, eczema, and cardiovascular problems and high blood pressure. All of those that I just mentioned are 20% or higher in terms of the percentage of the 3,256 people who reported improvements when they switched to a non-GMO diet. The lower than 20% group are still significant: asthma, menstrual problems, diabetes, underweight problems, cancer, kidney disease, infertility, autism spectrum disorder, Alzheimer's, and Parkinson's. So even though cancer is only 5% of the study, we're talking about, you know, a couple hundred people who did report dramatic improvements when they switched their diets. And so we have a film coming out called Secret Ingredients, that's secretingredientsmovie.com, about families that heal from serious conditions when they switch to organic food.
I want to thank you for coming on. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, Gary.
Jeffrey Smith. I'm Gary Noll. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.